Blog Talk Radio.
This is the greatest damn sports show, Atlanta, Georgia's newest internet radio sports show. Talking about your sports, your teams, every Thursday night from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/greatestdamn. Your host, the Nixon brother, Kev the analyst, Big Nixon the coach, and T-Nate the producer. We're talking NFL, NBA, NCAA football, basketball, sports, and everything else.
And welcome to the greatest damn sports show, Atlanta, Georgia, CNN Radio Sports Show. I'm your producer, T-Nix, and Kev, the analyst on.
What up, what up?
Hey, what's up, man? We got a couple of things we're going to talk about tonight, man. Thanks for joining me, man, and I want to thank y'all for joining us tonight. We ain't going to make this too long, but Super Bowl is over, football season over. We're going to have to move on to other things like draft, changing new coaches, and all that other good stuff. We're going to talk about this today, and then we're going to squeeze in a little bit of NBA. What's going on with you, bro?
Man, still trying to recover after that Super Bowl, man.
Still
good game.
Recover. It's a good game, man. Well, I think it ended. It had a good ending, but it wasn't the ending that everybody thought it was going to be. So, if you want to,
yeah,
let's go ahead and jump in it, man. And if anybody else wants to jump, I could please dial in at 347-327-9819 here on Blog Talk Radio. Yeah, man, it was a heck of a party, man. It was a lot of festivities going on, a lot of things going on. England pulled it out 28-24. It was a way that I didn't expect it. I didn't think it was going to go that way. It got down to the end, and it depends on your point of view, Kev. It seems like somebody literally dropped the ball, basically.
I think the coaches dropped the ball, man. I mean, we'll talk about the whole game eventually, but we might as well start where the game was made, which is the last offensive play for Seattle. So situation is the Patriots didn't call timeout, so clock's running down. It's second down and goal at the one-yard line. New England has two timeouts.
Right.
And Seattle has one. So, T-Nix, they're down by four. So, if Seattle scores a touchdown, then the Patriots still have an opportunity to kick a field goal, right?
Right.
So, this is my thoughts. And this is I'm giving you my thoughts as the game is going on. I'm not coming up with stuff. Now, I'm not being a backseat quarterback. T-Nix, when he just drops back regardless, my thoughts are, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
Because if it's an incomplete pass, the Patriots still have two timeouts, right? You had the best short yardage running back in the game. And even T-Nix, if you don't run Marshawn Lynch, the play I was calling for the whole night was the read option.
Read option.
You put the ball and the decision in the hands of Russell Wilson. And even if you do pass the ball, T-Nix, you have to get Russell Wilson outside the pocket and let him try to make something happen. So, I mean, it's like I'm breaking all that down as the play is going down. Okay, you're dumb enough to call a pass, but then you call a pass right up the middle where it's the heart of the goal line defense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like you have a stud Calvin Johnson or somebody who's going to go in there and get it regardless. You're throwing it to a rookie or a second-year player, Lockett, you know? You're putting a lot of stock on a lot of things that, just in my mind, just shouldn't even been called. It should have been a run to Marshawn Lynch at the least. And I would have done read option to say, like, hey, Marshawn, if it's there for you, I'm giving it to you. If not, I'm going to read it outside. If I get tackled, the Patriots still have to take a timeout. Or even if the Patriots don't take a timeout, T-Nix, at that point, I can take a timeout.
Right, right.
So all that's going through my head. So I think it was a dumb call. What about yourself, T-Nix?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's – I mean, Marshawn Lynch had 24 carries for 102 yards, just to validate what you were saying. That, he's been averaging, he averaged 4.2 yards the whole game, for the whole game. Like you said before, why wouldn't you give it to elite, probably the best short down back in the game? Put it in his hands. Let him do what he got to do. And if I mean, it's only second down.
Mm-hmm.
It's only second down. I mean, there's no sense for misdirection. If you can't get a yard or two with probably the best running back in the league right now, something wrong with your offense.
And you know, T-Nix, the funny thing is, I was talking to Falcon fans locally, and you know what I said, T-Nix, you know what, I could have understood the Falcons calling that play, because they're built with Julio Jones, Roddy White, and Harry Douglas, who's a real good slot receiver. I could see it with them even. Would I have called it that way regardless of who I had on offense? No. But I could understand it if you have an offense like the Falcons. But when you have an offense right. like Seattle that's predicated on that run, predicated on beast mode, predicated on Russell Wilson making great decisions, I just don't like the play call, man. And I said it before the play started, like when he first went back. And, of course, I said it a thousand times after the interception.
Yeah, you know, and that's just the whole thing, man. It shouldn't be no deception in this game. I mean, New England did a wide nine. They just brought everybody up. And the only people that were sitting back was the two safeties, linebackers, everybody, cornerbacks, everybody was up on the line. It was just the two safeties. Everybody else was up on the line. I think you would lose the ball just throwing that in traffic. And to start off with. So if you're going to do it like that, why don't you give it to, if it's going to be a cluster up in there, give it to your best man for the job and let him punch it in. At least try. You got another timeout. You're gonna run some time off of the clock. You're still gonna make it. I mean, it won't kill you like that pass did. It wouldn't kill you. You know what? I don't know what happened. Who made that call anyway? Did Pete Carroll call it or did the offense?
Right.
I mean, because
I think the offensive coordinator called it personally.
There was no reason for that.
So the offensive coordinator called it, but at every point in the game, of course, the head coach has the right to say, no, I don't like that play.
Right. Right.
So
but he trusted them all the way to the end. So
yeah.
He trusted them all the way to the end. So I guess ain't no sense of switching it up now. I don't know. I don't know if it was some beef going on or whatever. Because if Marshawn Lynch did make that touchdown, I would have believed he would have got MVP. No problem. In my opinion, he would have got MVP. And we'll be sitting up here talking about the Seahawks. But I guess we just going to have to sit back and wonder here on the Greatest Damn Sports Show. Well, this is something we're going to have to – we can talk about all the way to the draft and training camp. I guess we're going to have to let bygones be bygones, man.
It's a lot easier for us to do than the Seattle fans, I tell you that.
Yeah, yeah. Now, by saying about now, this is New England's fourth Super Bowl. Is Brady, I guess the question what people have been asking me, you know, when I go into grocery stores and I talk to people and meet and people that know me and everything, they ask me, is Brady the greatest quarterback ever? Well, I think it's only one other person that got more Super Bowls than Tom Brady. And that's and that gentleman is going into the Hall of Fame this year, and that's Charles Haley. But he's in a great company with other quarterbacks before Ray Bradshaw and Joe Montana. So, is he the greatest quarterback of all time for you?
I mean, I'm still a Joe Montana person myself because Joe Montana won all of the ones he went to. Now, some people say,
right.
Like, hey, it may tell you it takes talent to get to six. Hey, I give you that. But at the same time, when you hit on all of your opportunities when you get there, you just got to give credit where credit's due. So I'm not saying Brady's not great, but just in my mind, I'm always a Joe Montana fan, but also recognizing the brilliance of Bill Walsh and how important he was to getting Joe Montana there. But you say the same thing with Belichick, how important he was
right.
to getting Brady there. So all factors in between, I would just go with Joe Montana. That's my personal thought.
Let's go with Joe Montana. I'm still actually thinking about it because I'm looking at what Joe Montana had back in the 80s and what Tom Brady got now. All those guys that Tom Brady played with, are any of those guys, as far as wide receivers and even running backs for that matter, are any of them in the Hall of Fame? Can you name any of the wide receivers that, you know, the duos that he played with and when he won his Super Bowls? Montana had probably the best wide receiver, not just as a wide receiver, but a lot of people say he is the best of all time out of anybody, out of any position, and Jerry Rice.
Good point. But I'll tell you a lot of what made Jerry Rice, well, not a lot, but some of what made Jerry Rice so great was Joe Montana putting the ball where it needed to be put. So don't get it twisted. Jerry Rice had his part in it too. And I'm not saying anybody from the Patriots organization, wide receiver-wise, has been close to Jerry Rice, because that's not the case. But Joe Montana had something to do with that greatness, you know. And Randy Moss, don't forget Randy Moss. Brady had Randy Moss. They went undefeated, but they didn't pull off the Super Bowl. And Randy Moss was back playing great at that time, you know. Deion Branch was a really good receiver. And then I know Roger Craig was a good running back. But let's not take away credit from Corey Dillon those last 2 years when he was there, you know. Corey Dillon ran like a man those last couple of years where he was with the Patriots. So, and the offensive lines of the Patriots, we know the way that Belichick's going to build his teams. And they have always been very, very solid. So, let's not take away credit from New England. They've had some talent, but like you said, just in terms of Hall of Famers, yeah, you got to give it to San Francisco right there.
Right. But, you know, I'm still deciding. I'm kind of leaning toward Brady, but I don't watch both of them play. Joe he was a surgeon with it. I mean, it was hard. It was just hard to beat him. And I'm also looking at it. How many interceptions Tom Brady had? Three? The Super Bowl had three interceptions?
Two.
And he did two?
Yeah.
Russell Wilson didn't have any. He did more with less.
Russell Wilson had one. Remember the last
had
play?
One? Oh yeah, man, that don't even count, man. That was nail in the coffin, right there. But the whole game, Russell Wilson didn't. He had a pretty good game. I mean, and
he struggled at the beginning, but once he got some heat to him, you're right.
Yeah, he picked it up. He picked it up. Now, I can't compare Russell Wilson with Tom Brady or Joe Montana or nothing like that. I can't compare him like that. But, I mean, Russell Wilson is going to be a good player. And then in the back of my mind, I was like, well, Tom Brady is getting ready to take his walk. And I'm pretty sure Belichick, both of them going to be holding hands, you know, and it's going to be the end for the both of them at the same time. And Russell Wilson gonna get another chance. I think he'll get more chances. And I don't know. I think it was just more feasible for New England to just really go out winning four Super Bowls. So I don't know, man. I'm still up in the air, but I mean Joe Montana, man. I never seen nobody do it like him, man. I'm actually leaning towards Joe Montana, even though he was playing with a bunch of Hall of Famers. I'm still leaning towards Joe Montana, but I don't have no beef against Tom Brady. But I'm like,
and
you.
See, I don't know Unitas and all them, man. So you know how a lot of people say Unitas and Bart Starr, and you know, like I don't know them well enough to put them in my greatest conversation. Like you said, saw Joe Montana with my own eyes. Saw Elway. Really like Marino. You know, there's some real good quarterbacks, but just from my eyes, I still just go back to Montana.
Right. Yeah. So. But as far as the overall game, I mean, we were actually close in the scores. Didn't you take 20-24, and I think I took, 20-27?
I think it was something like that. It was close.
Yeah, we was pretty close. We was pretty close. I personally didn't expect Brady to actually throw four touchdowns. I mean, he was 37 for 50, 328, four touchdowns. Russell Wilson, he only threw 21 times, but he had 247 yards. But boy, they were some good yards. They were some good yards. And out of all the people out of the New England Patriots receiving corps, Julian Edelman and Danny Amendola was killing it. They were killing it, man. It just go back to the credit of Tom Brady. I mean, these guys will not be in the Hall of Fame. They will not be in the Hall of Fame, but yet still made them look like Hall of Fame material.
But you know, TNX, one injury that was very underrated. We all know about Cam Chancellor playing with a torn MCL. Earl Thomas with a separated shoulder, and now Richard Sherman needs surgery, basically Tommy John surgery. So we know about those three injuries in the defensive backfield. But one that was very underrated was the guy who caught the first interception, Jeremy Lane.
Right.
That's your guy that would have been on that quick DB. It would have been on your Edelman, or that would have been on your Amendola in certain formations. So that injury was very underrated in the Super Bowl, and I think it played more of a factor than the other ones. Because, I mean, Cam Chancellor gave up a couple of catches, but nothing huge, you know. We already know they threw at Richard Sherman only one or two times, and it was like a six-yard catch. And Earl Thomas made good plays. So that was a very underrated injury, was Jeremy Lane getting hurt.
Yeah, but Kevin, that game wasn't really the defense's fault. The defense did what they were supposed to do. Regardless of injury, they did what they were supposed to do. And it basically came on the one play.
But when the Legion of Boom is up 10 points, you don't expect them to give up 14 points in the second in the fourth quarter, basically. So, like you said, ultimately it didn't come down to that. But the Legion of Boom, we all know, if Lane's out there, I don't think they score two touchdowns in the fourth quarter.
And I can actually go for that. Yeah, I can go for that.
But like you said, I mean, ultimately it still comes down to the opportunity to run 1 yard and get a touchdown. After all of that.
Yeah, that's what it come down to, man. That's what it's come down to. And it's just a lot of things in this game, man. These was one of the better Super Bowls. I mean, I think I've seen in a while anyway. When we were downtown watching the Super Bowl, it was a lot of people rooting for the Seahawks. A lot of people rooting for them. Even though I said the Patriots was gonna win. But me and you came up with the same thing. It didn't matter. Either one of them was good enough to win. It's just, if Seattle would have got the touchdown at the end, I wouldn't have been upset. Even though I would have picked the Patriots, I wouldn't have been upset. I wouldn't have been surprised. And I'm pretty sure if the roles was reversed, with Seattle and New England, you know, people will be talking about, well, Brady too old. He would have made that throw 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
or something like that. So, I mean, it's tit for tat, and it seems like a lot of Patriot fans came out the woodwork after the Super Bowl the next day, because I had to run out to the grocery store. There was a couple of people wearing the Patriot shirts and Patriot hats and all that stuff. I'm like, wow, where were these people at, you know, a couple of weeks before? But, you know, that's the life of an NFL fan. Anything else? We got about 10 minutes before we go to the break. Anything else you want to add on this, man?
Oh, no. Yeah, we got to talk a lot more about this game, man. We just talked about the last play and then just kind of some generals. We got, like, the Florida game. When you looked at the first half, to me, the Patriots won the first half. They had the Seattle Seahawks on the ropes, because let's not get it twisted. Tom Brady threw that first interception in the end zone. So let's say they even get 3 out of that series, or 7. Then basically Seattle punts after the turnover. They get the ball back, and New England goes down and scores. But then Brady looked surgical on that first drive, but then the Legion of Boom started putting a little more pressure on the wide receivers. They were stuffing the running game very well. And then eventually Russell Wilson, just like you were talking about in that second quarter, T-Nick, how when he completed passes, he threw 21 passes but threw for 240-something yards. He completed that long pass down the field, and eventually they got that touchdown. That was huge, because remember, I think this was the second longest ever in the Super Bowl with a starting quarterback going without completing a pass. We're talking about almost halfway through the second quarter. But what does Russell Wilson do, T-Nick? He makes plays. Basically, he wasn't even throwing to Doug Baldwin. Doug Baldwin's only catch was the touchdown in the second half. Otherwise, he was going to scrubs. We didn't even know. I know I didn't know who Lockett was. I told you about Curse, and I thought Curse was going to make a play, which he did. We'll talk about that for sure. But it was people we didn't even know that Russell Wilson was making a stud in this game.
I got you. And then, in the first quarter to me, it seems like, you know, it was 0-0. It seemed like they were just really filling each other out. I mean, they were filling each other out. I was like, wow, this is going to be a low-scoring game.
And that changed for sure. Hey, Joe. Still in there working? I'm having big time issues with him. Yeah. No, shoot, since before the show. Here we go. What's your mom was talking about? What's your mom talking about? Yeah, I'm trying to see if it comes back around. T-Nex.
Yo.
All right, I hear you now.
But yeah, man, it was more the defenses. I think we pretty much almost looked at the two best defenses, you know, this year. But when you playing for all the cookies, you know, you can't expect nothing, no less. Give me your take on the defense, Kevin. Then we're gonna go. We're gonna go ahead and take it to a break, man.
I mean, like you said, bro, it's like Seattle was hurt in the backfield, and we know that. But they still showed up. Besides that fourth quarter, man, they caught their win, and they really played well. The linebackers and the defensive line really. Michael Bennett was a beast, man. But I tell you, on that other side, you got to get those cornerbacks, man. Bronner and Revis really kept things in front of them. Chung, they did a good job of, hey, really having to play the run against Marshawn Lynch and ultimately not giving up too many big plays. And, of course, when you talk about defense, man, you got to talk about the interception by Maxwell. So, huge plays, man. But it was a good Super Bowl, T-Nex.
Yeah. Yep, we just got to wait till next year to look for the next one, man. Hey, y'all listening to the greatest damn sports show, Atlanta, Georgia's internet radio sports show here on Blog Talk Radio. When we come back, we're going to talk a little more NFL, Super Bowl. And we're going to squeeze in a little bit NBA for you tonight here on Blog Talk Radio with T-Nex and Kev the Analyst.
Yes, sir.
Like I need the only one for you. 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/greatestdam. Follow us at blogtalkradio/greatestdam on Twitter at greatestdamsports. Click on our like page on facebook.com/greatestdamsports and click subscribe on our YouTube page at greatestdamsports. Call in or listen to our show on your phone at 347-327-9819. On Thursday night, we'll listen as long as you have something to say. Great talk, hot topics. You'll enjoy the Greatest Damn Sports Show.
And welcome back to the Greatest Damn Sports Show. I'm your host, T-Mix. We got Kev the Analyst online with us here on Blog Talk Radio. We're talking about the NFL, Super Bowl. Breaking it down, giving our opinions and all that good old stuff. Football season over, bro.
We knew it was coming, man.
But it was fun while it lasted. I guess before we jump on back into the NFL, I'm gonna run down a little bit of basketball to y'all tonight. Tonight, what's going on the tube right now? You got the Washington Wizards playing Charlotte, and right now Washington is winning 52-46 in the second quarter with 1:59 left. Wall leads the Wizards with 11 points. Henson leads Charlotte with 16. And another game tonight on TNT that just tipped off, the LA Clippers against the Cleveland Cavaliers. And that's knotted up at 2 with 11 minutes, 11 seconds left in the third quarter. Tonight at 10 o'clock, you got the Dallas Mavericks playing the Sacramento Kings. And at 10:30 on the doubleheader on the NBA on TNT, you got Phoenix at Portland. All right. I got the little NBA fix going on, man.
Well, you know what, bro? We're about to do more than a little fix tonight, man.
Yeah.
We got to get an ode to the Hawks, man.
I thought they was going to lead run off at least four more. Man, but I'm real impressed. They set the franchise record, they set the NBA record for the most consecutive wins. They beat Washington recently. Well, I think it was last night, 96-105, and Washington is currently in second place in the East. And Atlanta swept them, man. They got the tiebreaker. If it ever boiled down to it, Atlanta got the tiebreaker against them because they swept them. And, hey, man, this is a team, man. This is a team that everybody's looking at, man. And I think a lot of people are starting to get on board here in Atlanta. Man, you know what, man? They need to. I almost want them to go back and do the throwback 80s and 90s Hawk uniforms, man. But well, I just like to see them, man. I'm real proud of the Hawks, man. They doing what they need to do. Jeff Teague went off with 26 points in that game last night, and man, these guys are amazing, man. What's your take on the Hawks? I mean, you think these guys are gonna flutter when they get in the playoffs, which is hard for me to believe because these are the same people that are going to play in the playoffs are the same ones they play in the regular season. They already swept the Clippers. They already swept Indiana. They swept Washington. A couple of more other teams that I can't think of right now, but
They won 17 games in the month of January.
Right.
First of all, you played 17. That means you're playing more than every other night, which is ridiculous.
Right.
Which is the reason, and Anthony Davis made this a point. He's like, what we wanted to do against Atlanta was run them up and down the court because they've been playing so many games. They played the Friday and Saturday and then had to fly down to New Orleans for a game on Monday. So it didn't surprise me that they lost it, especially with Anthony Davis coming back. If he wouldn't have played, I think they still would have had a good chance to win because he dominated the game.
Right.
But T-Nix, all five of the starters were named Eastern Conference Players of the Month. That's never been done before.
Really?
So Korver, yeah, all five. Korver, Teague, Millsap, Horford, and Carroll. And
yeah.
Just like you said, it was Teague last night. It was Horford the night, you know, the game, that Saturday night game when they play Portland. Man, it could be anybody on any night. But one thing that worries me. Oh, go ahead.
Uh-huh. Well, so, I mean, because a lot of people say there's no superstars, you know, because they don't have a household name like LeBron, Kevin Durant, you know, people like that. Well, you know, and a lot of people are asking me, what is going to have to happen to this team for it to be a failure? Is it losing the first round? Is it getting to the East and losing, or is it losing the second round?
I think it's the only embarrassing.
That's the only thing that'll be a failure if they get swept in the playoffs.
In my opinion, because would you like to see them do better? Sure. Do I think they're going to do better? Sure. But if it's just getting swept would be embarrassing to me, and that would be a failure. But otherwise, even if they go seven games against a lesser team, the regular season still wouldn't be a failure just because overall they've shown the city of Atlanta that they can win. And T-Nex, you know, when we go back to the superstar debate, do you consider Manu Ginobili a superstar?
Right.
Do you consider Tony Parker a superstar?
No, I don't consider Tony Parker a superstar or Ginobili.
Leonard, do you consider him a superstar?
He is a superstar in the making.
Not a superstar, though. Tim Duncan, is he a superstar at this point in his career?
No, he's a star. I don't think he ever was a superstar. He was a star, but I don't think he ever was a superstar. I mean, because when you talking about that, if you want to name the most bipolarizing people that play in the NBA, okay, you can say LeBron, Kevin Durant. Heck, even with the record that the Knicks got, people can say Carmelo Anthony and Chris Paul, Kobe. You know, superstars like that. I mean, Kobe is on the backside of his career, but you know. And I done named five, six people right there. Is Tim Duncan the best person on the team, maybe? Yeah, he probably is. But he's no superstar.
Okay, now define me. Okay, so maybe let me drill into that a little bit more. So what is your definition of superstar? Somebody polarizing or somebody that wins or somebody that has the stats? Or is it a certain combination of all three of those?
I think it's a certain combination, but it's – I think a lot of people make a superstar because they're flashy with what they do. I mean, you know, jump high, a lot of dunks, you know, like a lot of game point winners, you know, at the buzzer beaters, you know, stuff like that. You know, real exciting. Tim Duncan is not exciting to watch.
Nope.
I went
not
to the
at
Hawks
all.
Game. The Hawks are not exciting to watch. But they go out there and play basketball. And that's the whole thing. I mean, like I said, Carmelo Anthony is probably the worst team in the NBA right now. But getting still, Carmelo can go out there and score 42 points, and they'd be like, oh, man, he the baddest thing. Yeah, but they still lost. And I think people, those are the majority people that considers people superstars are pretty much not really experts.
So you just answered one of my questions then, in terms of can the Hawks win without a superstar? If people don't consider Tim Duncan a superstar, what, Duncan has, what, 4 or 5 championships in his lifetime?
Right.
So he has more than Carmelo, Chris Paul, LeBron James, everybody on your list but Kobe. He has more than all of them combined, you know?
Right.
So when that's being said, yeah, the Hawks can win without a superstar. Because think about it. Let me see. They were in the finals the last 2 years. Most people think the Spurs should have won that first year when game 6, when the Heat came back from, what, like 10 points down with like a minute and something left.
Right.
And Tim Duncan would almost have either 5 or 6 rings. So, yeah, the Hawks can win without a superstar. I put them where the Spurs are now. No, I don't put them there yet. But at the same time, T-Knicks, let's say they played the number 8 seed. They played, let's just say, Charlotte. They beat Charlotte in 5 games. Let's say the 4 seed, they play Washington again. They beat Washington in, say, 6 games. Then if you get the Bulls or the Cavs in a 7-game series, I think the Hawks can go toe-to-toe with them, you know? Now, is the superstar going to pull out a game or two? Sure, LeBron James is going to go one of those games where he just goes for 45 and nobody can stop it. But I don't think he can do that for 7 games. And if you can kind of D up on Irvin and stay in front of Love, they can beat the Cavs. And we all know that the Bulls can't score a lot, you know? So –
Yeah.
The Hawks
easily
could win the East, you know?
Yeah, and by what your logic, what you saying that, a lot of people are not even going to say that the Hawks are going to win the East. I mean, your logic is sound on it. But a lot of people, I don't know if they're going to win the East because they up there looking at, well, you know, Miami. Miami's not the same team they was last year. Cleveland.
Nowhere close.
Yeah, they got LeBron. Ain't nowhere close. Miami is, you can pretty much say Miami is better than Cleveland right now. You know?
Well, Cleveland's won 11 straight, so Cleveland's starting to turn it on.
Yeah, they're starting to turn it on. But you got teams like Chicago and Washington, which is better than Cleveland. And the only thing reason why Cleveland is winning because they're starting to gel up there. And that's the only reason. And I guess a lot of people that don't know basketball like that, and by being in Atlanta, I guess it's safe for me to say that Atlanta is a maybe a snake-bitten team as one come to franchises, professional franchises. They're pretty much snake-bitten as anybody else. I mean, they're not used to Budenholzer's philosophy. Somebody asked him the question when they beat Washington. They said, what is it that makes the Hawks so successful? And he told the reporter, he said, how you win is more important than winning. What it takes to win is more important than winning. And you know what? And I sat back and thought about it, and I was like, you know what? What, you know, it's not what you need to do to win. Do what you got to do to win. What are you prepared to do to win? Because you can have all the talent in the world. When LeBron got down to Miami, they was the best team. Everybody thought they was the best team. You had Bosh, Wade, LeBron. And they thought nobody could beat those guys, but they got beat. Dallas beat them. San Antonio beat them. So did they do everything they need to do to win? And that's the question. And that's what the Hawks are proving right now. They don't have any egos. They don't care who get the ball, as long as it go in the bucket. And everybody comes in and do their part, and they don't go outside their role. If they playing shooting guard, they're not trying to play center. If they're power forward, they're not playing to play small forward. And at the same time, they're helping everybody out at the same time to achieve a goal. And, you know, this is a philosophy, I hope, that Quinn taking over the Falcons, that he can bring, because look at the way that his defense played in the Super Bowl. Yeah, you let the Patriots score 28 points, but heck, you playing against Tom Brady. That's almost a gimme right there. And I allow a lot of people
to play.
And they play very aggressive, but everybody did what they were supposed to do. And now Atlanta, they're going to get upset. And I'm telling you, Kev, there's some people, they're going to get upset in this draft, because when Quinn start drafting defensive players and they said, well, this offensive player was out there and you didn't get him and he get a defensive player. And Atlanta is getting ready to see something they ain't never seen. They finna see a team with some defense, I believe. And a lot of people ain't going to be used to it. I'm serious. A lot of people are not going to be used to it.
They better get used to it, huh?
They need to. They need to. As long as I can think, all the way back to Jerry Glanville, they done had these offensive coaches, Reeves, you know, all of them, all these offensive coaches, and now here they got a Super Bowl defensive coach. And, you know, it's just the same way that when Marvin Lewis got to Cincinnati. He already had his offense. He already had his offense when Chad was there and everything. He had an offense. The Bengals was scoring 35 points a game and still losing. Because they couldn't stop nobody. And the Falcons, they got the same thing. They got Julio, they got Roddy, Harry Douglas, Devin Hester. I don't know what they're going to do with Steven Jackson, but they got Matt Ryan. And all he has to do, people of Atlanta, they might have to, they're going to start seeing some 17 to 20 games that the Falcons might win. 17 to 20. Matt Ryan only throwing for 250. Because they trying to save him for later on in the season. And a lot of people are going to get upset with that. It's time for a coaching change. And it seems like the Hawks are doing it. They setting the trend for it.
Well, it'd be interesting, and that's for sure. Because his offensive coordinator, Shanahan, who's been an offensive coordinator for some years now, I think he'll be able to utilize the passing game, like you said, in a more limited fashion, rather than it being running gun, shooting, running shoot, you know. Like you said, it's more of a pro-style offense where, hey, we run the ball on first down. We might run it on second down and make it third manageable. Okay, and if we don't get that third and short, you know, we do punt and let our defense play. So, like you said, it is going to be philosophically a change for not only the organization, but like you said, also the fans. But to win, hey, you got to do what you got to do.
Right, and that's what it's going to take. And a lot of people, I mean, because New Orleans, like, they've been the alpha dogs in the NFC South. They come there with Drew Brees, and they got, Colston and all those guys that were here before, with Meacham and David Henderson and all those guys, and they had a spread offense, and we going to throw it, and y'all going to try to stop us, and then everybody else in the division had to do the same thing. Atlanta went and got Matt Ryan. Carolina went and got Cam Newton. And so they built their teams off of the people that was winning the division. And look down there. You got Mike Evans, Vincent Jackson. You know, they got a heck of a wide receiver core down there. Got a scat back in Doug Martin. I think Atlanta is going to flip the game. It's going to take a couple of years, but I think they're going to flip it. In New Orleans, and Carolina do got some pretty decent defense right now. I mean, they did win the division. And did get past the first round. I mean, you gotta give them that much. They did get past the first round. And so, therefore, don't be surprised you see Rob Ryan and Lovie Smith. We got to start getting some defense, because these guys are limiting us to 24 points a game. I mean, you can win like that, but you got to have a defense to win like that.
But the good thing to Knicks is they at least have a coach now because it's been a long time coming. And the fact they had to wait until the day after the Super Bowl, you know, that's just part of the game. But they were able to hire the offensive coordinator early and, you know, start to establish certain things. So I think Atlanta ultimately will be fine. It'll be kind of like Jacksonville's transformation, where it's taken a couple of years, but now you're starting to see some upticks. And we'll see what happens with the Falcons, man, because the division wasn't tough last year, but that's showing up don't mean it's not tough next year.
Right, right, right. Well, Kevin, man, shoot. But as far what is your opinion on it? How far you think we seen what the Falcons did this year as far as their record? With 6-10, I know everything's going to have to get revamped, especially the defense. I mean, you think how are they going to get better or are they going to get worse?
I could see them going 6-10 again. To be honest with you,
really?
Yeah. I don't know. Of course, their draft and their free agency and everything. But the first year of a head coach sometimes can be difficult. And
he's going to have to reestablish the squad.
So I just say even. What's your
Well, first of all, they're going to have to pay Julio. I don't know how much they're going to pay Julio. I think Julio's probably going to get $100, $120 million. I don't think you're going to let that guy go. I think they're going to reshuffle a lot of guys on defense, keep a core group. I think that the cornerbacks, I think the secondary is pretty much safe. But they might have to chunk a couple of defensive linemen, maybe a linebacker or so. I think Sam Baker is on the chopping block, clear up some cap space. They will not be trading up this year, I tell you that much. Atlanta going to sit right where they at. Yeah, if anything, they're going to trade back and pick up another pick. But I think I'm maybe looking at the Falcons at 8-8 this year, next year coming up. Yeah, I think the Falcons will be 8-8. Because, I mean, I think it was at least four games the Falcons, they lost by 7 points or less this year. They could have beat, they could have easily went 10-6. They just didn't have the defense that they needed. So, well, bro, heck, man, we coming at the end, man. Do you want to cap anything else off on this, or should we just go ahead and just take it on out?
I mean, the Super Bowl was a good game. It was fun. Football season enjoy the off
season. Yeah. Shoot, man, it was a nice little venue that we had for the Super Bowl party. The seating was a little bad, but you know, it was a good. It had good atmosphere. I will say that.
Yeah, man. And Ignis, I'm gonna tell people like this.
You may not watch much NBA, but tomorrow,
I think it's gonna be an exciting game where you can see.
Oh, that game sold out. Yeah, that's gonna be a good game, and that might be something we might be looking at in the NBA championship. You know what? But after all that, I would probably like to see San Antonio and Atlanta. I like to see Atlanta dethrone their counterpart, so to speak.
And that West is not saying the East is, but the West is real tough. That's the hardest thing to predict.
And the whole thing about that, you know what's keeping Atlanta on top? Ain't nobody getting really hurt. They have no serious injuries, man. That's what's keeping Atlanta floating like they are.
Well, and they lost Cephalosa.
Yeah.
So,
but
That's what Josh Jenkins, and remember me talking about Jenkins a couple of weeks ago, saying he was just waiting on his turn.
He's got his turn now.
Yeah. And he's going to make the best of it.
Yeah, so he's just building. Yep, exactly.
Building depth. Well, heck, man. Man, I just want to thank everybody for joining in tonight and listening to the Greater Damn Sports Show. So, here on Blog Talk Radio, you got T. Nix and Kev the Analyst. Hey, join us here next Thursday. We're going to kick off another episode. Man, episode 70 is in the books, bro. We're going to do something for the 100th episode. We need to do a live
show. We do something somewhere.
Hey, then we got to get ready for the NFL draft. We got to do something with them.
And don't forget the NCAA tournament.
We're going to do something for the NCAA tournament that Thursday night. All right, bro. Heck, man, I'm probably going to hit you up this weekend, and then we're going to discuss a couple of things. And then we'll let everybody know what we come up with.
Sound like a plan.
All right, I just want to thank everybody for listening to the Greatest Damn Sports Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Join us in next week on Thursday from 7 to 9, and we're going to make it kick off. Holla, Kev.
You're listening to the Greatest Damn Sports Show, Atlanta, Georgia's newest internet radio sports show, talking about your sports, your team, every Thursday night from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/greatestdamn. Follow us at blogtalkradio/greatestdamn, on Twitter at greatestdamnsports, click on our like page on facebook.com/greatestdamnsports, and click subscribe on our YouTube page at greatestdamnsports. Call in or listen to our show on your phone at 347-927-9819 on Thursday night. We'll listen as long as you have something to say. Great talk, hot topics. You'll enjoy the Greatest Damn Sports Show.